afternoon, everyone. It's Adam from Uberfoot 24 with my 40th stop-off on the Welcome to Scotland series. I've made it to the 40 now. There's only a couple more to go. And I've come back over to the west of Scotland today. I'm in beautiful Paisley with John Allison and John White, who are the SLOs. The SLOs, the supporter liaison officers. I hope I've worded it correctly there, gents. At St. Mirren, of course, the beautiful St. Mirren, a football team that has always been on my radar, even going way back to the 80s. But I'm looking forward to learning a bit more about them today. Gents, how's everything over there today?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good, yeah.
Yeah,
nice day, otherwise.
It's great to hear. Great to hear. Really, big thank you from me for joining us today. It's always a privilege.
Thank you for the invite. It's great to be asked on. Thank you.
No worries, mate. No worries. Before we get started, a big thank you to Stell as well at Shoot the Defence for all the hard work you do behind the scenes, Stell, getting these podcasts out to the wide world and spreading our love of Scottish football. And that's what we're here about today, aren't we, guys?
Absolutely.
Now, I mentioned. Mention the 80s, of course, because that was one of the sort of the high points, I think, in St. Mirren history, unless you're going to correct me, Rob, correct me over the next sort of 5-10 minutes. But what is the background to the club, John? John Allison, of course.
I'm sure John knows as much as I do. He could fill in when I'm wrong or pick me up or fill in the gaps, yeah. The 80s were a high point for St. Mirren. A club that was founded in 1877. Originally, well, it was 1876. It was a gentleman's athlete. Well, I think it was rugby and cricket that were mainly formed to partake in. But then they became a football club in 1877. Mm-hmm. We're a founding member of the Scottish League, so unfortunately, a claim to fame in that one is I think we're the only surviving founding member never to have won the top division, but okay. We were a founding member of the league. We have won the Scottish Cup, one of the three trophies, or the three top trophies in Scottish football. We've won that on three occasions, in 1926, 1959, and most recently in 1987. Mm-hmm. We've won the Scottish League Cup in 2013. We're the only Scottish team to have won a competition that the teams that didn't qualify for Europe used to play between Scotland and England, the Anglo-Scottish Cup.
Oh, we're
actually
wow.
The Scottish side ever to win that. and that was in 1980. We've won the second division as it was originally, or the lower league. We've won that five times. First time in 67, 68. Then we won it again in 76, 77, 99, 2000, 05, 06, and then most recently in 2017,
18.
So,
that is a whistle stop tour, wasn't it?
That really was, wasn't it?
Really was. Well done, well done. I mean, as I say, I mentioned that because I just turned 40 last year. So, you know, mid-80s, where it's my early football memories. Is it the... Is it Dundee United you played in the final?
In
87. Yeah. That's just pulled it out from somewhere past all my teaching qualifications and that. As you can see where my priorities are.
That's good knowledge there. Yeah, that's good knowledge.
But of course, you had a few European runs back then as well, if I'm not mistaken.
We did, yes. We played in European football four times. The first time was in 80-81. We qualified by finishing third in the league that year, I think it was. We finished third or fourth. I think it was third. So that was the first time we ever appeared in Europe. And I think our first game was against Swedish team, IF Elfsborg.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we actually won that one 2-1 away from home. And then my first ever European game following St. Mirren back home at Love Street, as the ground was called. It was actually called St. Mirren Park officially, but everybody knew it as Love Street because that was the street that one of the main entrances in the grounds was on. And that finished nothing each. So we obviously went through to the next round and drew the mighty St. Etienne, who came calling to Paisley. Yeah, it was nothing each in Paisley. And then... it was my first ever away to a European trip. I went and travelled by bus from Paisley all the way down to St. Etienne. And we lost. We lost 2-0. A certain Michel Platini was playing for Saint-Étienne at that time.
Wow. What great memories, eh? Absolutely.
It was, yeah. That was a long bus journey, I can tell you.
definitely. I mean, all right, now, I don't know if you can help me with this one, but the name St Mirren, obviously you're based in Paisley. Is there some, local reference to the name at all?
It's named after after the person, an actual saint. It's actual St Mirren. He was, what would you say, John? What was he?
Some old monk.
Monk. There you go.
As far as St Mirren are concerned, it's the only team probably in Scotland and England in the senior football that's actually named after a person.
So, yeah, that's a good point, John. Yeah.
I can't. Yeah, definitely. He must be. But it's a. I was curious, it was one of those, you grow up and obviously football teams are, referenced to their local regions in most cases, or local, the town where they're based. But then St Mirren, I remember looking on the map of Scotland trying to find St Mirren, and I couldn't. I must have been about 7-8 at the time, but it's like, where are you?
I think he found out St Mirren himself, I think, or Mirren as he would have been then, because obviously he wasn't alive when he was a saint. I think it was a small religious colony in Paisley, and from then, obviously, he must have performed a miracle or something, or somebody prayed to him and performed a miracle, because he eventually got sainthood and was the patron saint of Paisley, which I guess when the team formed, or the athletics club or whatever formed, that's the name that they took, the St Mirren.
Very cool. Now, you mentioned Love Street there, or St Mirren Park, or the old ground. What was the reason behind the move to the new ground? And what's the present name? What's the name that the fans call the new ground? And what is your official title?
The official title of the new ground at the moment is the Smyzer Stadium. So that's the St Mirren Independent Supporters Association, who are actually going to be the fan owners of the club come the summer. So that was a nod to them that they got the naming rights. It's in Greenhill Road. I don't think anyone refers to it as Greenhill Road, John, do they? Lots of people still call it Love Street. I'm going to Love Street today, even though it's nowhere near.
I think, it's not that far away. It's just about a quarter of a mile down the road.
Fair days. Yeah.
People still say you can down to Love Street, even though it's not there.
When it opened,
it was St Mirren Park again, not New St Mirren Park, and it was just called St Mirren Park. So when it first opened, that was the name of it was still St Mirren Park.
What was the reason behind the move?
Financial.
Fair enough.
The Love Street itself was one of those really an old stadium, much loved by everyone it went to, but it was a mishmash of different stands from different eras, which was developed over the years. When we had to go, first time we had to go into the Premiership, had to be all seated, and we had to put undersoil heating on. And the club was in dire financial circumstances, and the people who actually saved it from a person called Reg Beerley, they saw that the only way they saw forward was to sell the ground to a supermarket chain, use that to clear the debt and to buy build a purpose-built stadium. And that's what happened. It was sold to Tesco. I think it was Tesco, John, is that right?
That was, yeah.
Yeah, I think there was about, was it 20 million or something?
I don't know the exact figure. But
I don't know the figure, but it was enough for someone to clear the debt and build a stadium.
Yeah, but as with most clubs, most clubs traditionally, when they established themselves in town centres, effectively, and the town grew, the value of the land that the stadium was on at the time became quite high, as is with lots of clubs. So moving a quarter mile down the road to what would effectively be cheaper land, if you want to call it that. So they got the land cheaper than what they were selling it for, and that's how they were able to afford to build the stadium.
Yeah, it wasn't actually either a straightforward process, because the club had to apply to the local council to get the land rezoned so it could actually be commercial from its use as leisure, because it was a football stadium. So there was quite a gathering of fans outside the council when that vote was going forward to try and ensure that, for the safety, you know, to try and secure St Mirren's future, that the vote went ahead, and thankfully it did. So
I'm going to jump around a little bit here, if you'll indulge.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
John White there. Obviously, you just mentioned that because you were talking about the ownership issues, obviously, and you mentioned that the club's going to become supporter owned or owned by the Supporter Trust this summer. What's been the process that's led to that?
Well, basically, Supporters Trust started off around about 2001. Mm-hmm. And it started out just as a couple hundred fans. Again, the club at that time, this is before the roof stadium, was having financial difficulty. A couple hundred guys got together and started using it as a fundraising exercise. And at that time, Supporters Trusts were beginning to get developed and really coming in. And we got a bunch of the guys, which we'll call them a bunch of guys, including myself, basically got Supporters Trust status. And basically it just went on from there. And it started off as a financial, just putting into the club. But what started was one of the big things that Supporters Trust bodies would say, try and get something back for the money that you're putting into the clubs. Because a lot of clubs, fans have put money into the club and get absolutely nothing back. So we were in the fortunate position at the time that the club had unissued shares mm-hmm. sitting at the time. So basically that's how it started. Club, we were putting money in, 50 grand a time, and getting X amount of shares in the club. The number of shares really didn't have a massive influence, but it did mean the trust were shareholders. And basically it grew for quite a while until there was no more unissued shares available. So the trust went through maybe four or five years, just kind of treading water, you know, just maybe a couple of hundred members, just paying a couple of pounds each. But basically then what happened maybe 4 or 5 years ago, 6 years, probably more than that actually, the opportunity came for a supporters buyout. And basically what happened is we then went, you know, public, encouraging people under a project called Buy the Buds, and get something like 1,200 members signing up, all paying £12 a month each. And the principle was buying the shares off of the director who owned the shares at the time. And pretty much they're on course, probably the next few weeks, but certainly for between now and summertime, they'll have bought enough shares and paid up probably something like £750,000 for something like 51% of the shareholding of the club. So that's basically what's going to happen. What they also did was, but originally when Buy the Buds was launched, it was at the time the way the shares were working out, we're going to end up with something like 68%. But what happened was a company called The Kibble, mm-hmm. which they agreed to buy 28% of it. So the way it was working out, The Kibble was like a 28% minor shareholding, and the Smizer, St Mirren Supporters Trust, was going to be 51%. And it meant we got it, obviously, we didn't need to buy 68% of the shares, so we just got the 51%. And basically, that's why it's happening this summer rather than 2 or 3 years' time. To give you an understanding of The Kibble is a charity, and it's been in Paisley, something in the region, for about 180 years, quite mm-hmm. significant. And basically what they are is they're a kind of, how do you describe them, John? Kind of...
It's always disadvantaged children that they've,
yeah,
they've
always true. Been... It's a fostering service kind of thing. And basically what they do is they train the kids so they can get jobs, etc., train young people so that they can
give them opportunities. The children that have come from a disadvantaged background, they provide opportunities for.
Yeah, so it's education and care for young people. So for them to be seen as like a sponsor, you know, getting the shares, the reason they wanted the shares was so that they could then use the facilities at St Mirren. basically what has also been transpiring as well, the young people in their care are actually working now in St Mirren. So whereas before the club might have been short of caterers or joiners and all the mm-hmm. different trades, sales, marketing, all that kind of stuff, these young people effectively can do these or start to train these jobs, which means effectively there's more people working for the club mm-hmm. and Kibble kids are getting trained and educated. So it's a real win-win situation for everybody concerned, you know, from the club and for the kids as well and for the standing of the Kibble. And effectively now you've got two charities, or two bodies with charitable status running the club. One is the St Mirren Sports Trust and the other one is the Kibble. So it's pretty unique, you know, in football generally. So things are looking promising.
One of the things I've been really impressed with, but as I visited, you know, so many clubs recording podcasts like this, just listening to all the charitable acts that are going on there. And, I think St Mirren's taking it even a step further there, where you've got two charitable trusts, act companies involved in the running club. What other things do you do there on the, on the charitable side, reaching out to the community and supporting them? And I imagine during this sort of COVID era, it's, you've probably stepped up and had a lot more things that been able to do.
Yeah, the charitable foundation, especially under lockdown, have been doing some absolutely tremendous work in delivering food parcels to people that are not, are either really struggling financially or whatever through being either laid off or being on furlough. They also, the charitable foundation run a lot of the SPFL trust programs. So mm-hmm. the football fans in training, which is designed to get those of us like myself who are overweight back into some kind of fitness program with an association to the club. They run the football memories program. I'm trying to remember the name of that, but that's right. They run that. They also run something in Christmas Day. Not this year, unfortunately, because of COVID, but in previous years, although this year they still had something, but it was a Christmas dinner where people who were either going to be alone or elderly, etc., at the ground could come along, get some entertainment and get a Christmas dinner. They would get transported from their house, picked up in a car or minibus, taken to the stadium and given their dinner, entertainment, presents, have a really good time, and then obviously taken home. So obviously under COVID, that couldn't happen this year, but what they did actually do was they delivered it. So they made all the food, etc., and presents up at the stadium and then delivered it out into the community. So they really have done a whole load of good work. There's also Street That's Stuff, brilliant. Which is a joint venture between, I think, the council and St Mirren. And they go out with goals and coaches and give free coaching to the kids and the local deprived communities, etc., and other communities. So, we really are a community-based club.
Ah, that's brilliant. I've got to ask you, John, have you got a walking football team?
I think one developed after the football fans in training. But I think because of COVID, etc., it's fallen away a bit,
Okay. I have to ask because it's... sorry, John.
Well, you certainly used to have one.
Actually, we used to, yeah.
Just myself,
Yeah. John actually played in a running one rather than a walking one. I'd be more a walking football team. But John still was... He's still athletic enough that he could play.
You say running, you're obviously using the term loosely.
No, I mean, I have to ask, I think it's brilliant that, so many of the clubs are, they're getting being able to support people from when they're 5-6 years old right the way through to, into their later years. You can come, you can play, you can get involved and then supporting them like with projects like Football Memories and the like right the way through into their older years. So I think it's, real congratulations. I've been so impressed with all the projects that are going on across Scotland.
It's the only way to do it nowadays, be there the whole time. You can't just, it's not like the old days where a football club can just expect people to turn up. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got a role to play and they need to do these things as well, you know. So, yeah, it's pretty much widespread.
It's brilliant. It really is. Now, going back to my childhood, obviously I remember, you know, the 80s when, you know, won the cup into Europe, and then from a distance, St Mirren's, you know, always looked a bit like a yo-yo club. Am I right? What's it, you know, John? Yeah. What's it been like over the last few decades?
Yeah, roller coaster, yo-yo, up down, yeah,
There it is. But you've been, you know, happily. When did you get back in the Premier League?
Last time was 2000. Well, last promotion was 2018. That was an 18-month roller coaster leading to that, though, because the season before that in the Championship, we were almost searched for relegation. Round about October, we were bottom of the league. At the turn of the year, we were miles behind all the other teams. I think at one stage, we were at least 12, maybe 15 points behind Raith Rovers. We hadn't won a game. We only won our first game, away game, down at Queen of the South. I think that was January, February. And that was a last-minute goal from Stevie Mallon. We changed manager around about the October, November. And the new manager came in. In the January transfer window, he said, what many players did Jack Ross sign? 12 or something like that? 11, 12
yeah,
players?
Yeah,
which we're all sitting there, I mean, going, this is only going one or two ways. And it went the right way. We went on there and we went on huge unbeaten run. We actually finished up in third bottom place, safe, with a 1-1 draw at Easter Road in the last game of the season. And Raith Rovers, who were, as I say, 12 to 15 points ahead of us, actually finished up behind us in the playoff spot. Yeah. It was an incredible roller coaster. And we went from there to the next season, to just continuing on with that. Jack Ross made another couple of signings in the summer, and we strolled the Championship that year and came up. And then, unfortunately, in the summer, we were all looking forward to Jack Ross and seeing where he could take us in the Premiership. And Sunderland came calling, and off he went to Sunderland. And the manager we got in, Alan Stubbs, seemed to kill the entire mood at the club, and we went on a downward spiral. Well, so, yeah.
Still kicking along. You're having a good season now, anyway, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. Yeah,
good. Right, gents. Let's change tack just a little bit. I mean, for people listening, of course, we're talking about Paisley. We're talking about St Mirren. For some people, a bit like me many years ago, we'd have no idea where Paisley is. So where exactly are you, you know? Who are your nearest rivals? And who are the clubs that, you know, get the passion boiling the most?
Well, first of all, as far as location is concerned, Paisley is just west of Glasgow. It often gets kind of spoken about in the same sentence as Glasgow. It's not actually, like any person from any town, we're not in Glasgow, it's a separate thing altogether. It's just west of it. And in fact, Glasgow Airport is actually in Paisley. So it's one of those kind of things, you know. So as far as the stadium's concerned, we're like 5 minutes drive, you know, taxi ride from Glasgow Airport. So if anyone in Europe's listening and they fancy a trip over to see St Mirren, the airport is 5 minutes drive away.
That's an easy commute.
It's walking distance. But,
nice plug, John.
All your faces and things like that. But after that, as far as getting into, you know, getting to the ground, etc., it's in St Mirren, is in the town of Paisley. There is another way of getting there is there's a train station called Paisley Gilmer Street, which is the main station in Paisley. And it's in a place called County Square. And that's where the likes of all your pubs and clubs, restaurants, etc., are in that area. So within a couple of minutes distance, there's quite a lot of pubs. And that's where a lot of the travel clubs leave from. Some of the pubs that are in there, like Tile Bar, Brewer's Tap, Court Bar, Bank House, these guys all run travel clubs, and they're all within that kind of half a mile radius. That's probably, the ground is probably about a 20-minute walk from the town centre of Paisley, but also at Gilmer Street Station, 2 minutes away is St James's Station, further down the line, and that train station is like, what, 200 yards away from the ground.
From the ground, aye.
The end of the ground, yeah. So it's really quite easy to get to, either by plane or train or car.
I believe we did try to petition ScotRail or ask them to change the name of the station from St James's to St Byrne, but they refused, unfortunately, which would have been nice. The other thing about Paisley to mention is, I think at one stage, Paisley was actually the biggest town in Britain, so the biggest town not to be a city. So it was massive. It had the thread mills employed thousands upon thousands of people, and people all over the world will know Paisley Pattern. It's actually named after Paisley, the town. That's what it's named after.
Ah, right. So, I mean, who were your rivals there? Our
derby rivals are Greenock Morton.
Ah.
It's a Renfrewshire derby. That's our main rivals. We try to stay away from the Rangers-Celtic divide. They're not our rivals, although they do take many fans out of Paisley, much to any Samar fans' chagrin and displeasure. We would like them to come along to visit a local team. So, Ibrox Park from St Mirren Park is about 10-15 minutes along the motorway. Celtic Park a wee bit further, but yeah. No, our big rivals, when they're in the same division, which they're not very often, I have to get that dig in for all those Morton fans listening, would be Morton.
Fair dues. All right then. It's always a bit of fun. Not anything with Partick, Queen's Park. I mean, they're based, or is it? You kind of try and keep all the Glasgow clubs.
Partick Thistle's actually were very similar to ourselves. Went up and down the leagues, etc. I think they're actually in the third tier at the moment. But again, a bit like ourselves. As far as the fan base is concerned, had a good potential. Same kind of situation, if you like, with the Old Firm as we did. So they're trying, but they also had a good fan base also. And when we played Partick, either at home or away, it's always a reasonable crowd for both travelling fans, because it's quite easy to get to. It's just over the other side of the river.
We had a quite good relationship with Partick Thistle a long time as well, because their chief executive was Ian Maxwell, who had played for us as well as Queen's Park, and is now the chief executive of the SFA. And actually, in one Scottish Cup tie, when Partick Thistle were drawn against us in Paisley, we actually managed to have a game with no segregation. We had the farmer's stand was open to both sets of supporters. It was quite unique. So that was really quite good.
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I have to ask, I mean, obviously pre-COVID days is our only reference point, but I was expecting you to tell me that you're quite a noisy bunch, but now if you've been able to take away segregation between you and Partick, is it quite a friendly place to go to then, or?
Yeah, we do have our ultras who are very noisy, and I think you can say I've made it very colourful and added a great deal of atmosphere to the stadium in recent years. Wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things, it's maybe they don't actually call themselves ultras as most.
No.
Scotland don't actually, but there really is. It's not the kind of, they don't have any kind of serious behavioural problems or anything like that at all. You're right what you say. On both counts, you have the situation where it can be quite noisy, can be quite colourful, and it's a good atmosphere at the ground. But you also have the situation where it's quite civilised. There's no bigotry,
in that respect, you're right. Yeah.
We do actually have what we term a family stand. That's where all people can go anywhere, but particularly in that stand, there's no swearing and all that kind of stuff. People take their kids there. They can feel, I would say at St Mirren, they can feel comfortable and they can feel safe. There's never really any problems.
Definitely.
Good in that respect, as well as having the kind of the noise and the atmosphere as well. So it's a good kind of best of both worlds, if you like, But one of the things as SLOs, but one of the things that we had done maybe about a year or two back, we had the situation where we were having what we term fan engagement meetings, and we invited all the representatives of the different travel clubs, all the supporter groups, like all the travel clubs, the North Bank, as we say, various St. Martin Supporters Trust, Fans Council, as well as club chairman. We had representatives of the police, dedicated football officer. So we had three or four meetings. We had them quarterly up until COVID. And what I would say is that they were quite very beneficial meetings. It wasn't just a talking shop, but one of the things that I would say is really significant to come out of it is there'd been potentially, particularly away games, there'd been potential for some issues, shall we say. Mm-hmm. But because the DFO was in amongst the crowd, people knew who it was. There was a lot of potential, well, not a lot, there was a couple of situations that could have been a problem, but because we had this communication and everyone knew everybody else, it totally diffused the situation. So it's been good in that respect. And that's kind of one of the biggest things I know is the success of SLOs in Europe. Mm-hmm. Problem. Not that we ever had a problem, but it's helped in a lot of cases, and a lot of people know each other and kind of respect each other's role in the whole situation. And I would say definitely the fan engagement meetings were a big success. You know, obviously once after the COVID, we'll be starting them up again as well.
Yeah, I can only concur with what John was saying, that I think the biggest success we've had as SLOs is these fans the fan engagement meetings. And it's really interesting to see the dialogue between the fans and the club and the stewards and the police. A lot of the times when things were explained as to why things happened, you could see a lot of the fans saying, all right, now I understand it. It was they couldn't really understand why they were, a lot of the times they were being either stewarded or dealt with police in the way they were. But you could see there was actually a bit of mutual understanding on both sides in that one. And it was, fair to say, a success that we're really quite proud of, John. Yeah,
absolutely.
Great.
Mutual understanding is probably the best way to put it. For everybody, you know, fans, stewards, police, club. Yeah, absolutely everybody.
I've got to ask, guys, how did you two both start then as SLOs? What attracted you to the role, shall we say?
No, to be honest, I wouldn't say it attracted us to the role. At the time, maybe about 3-4 years ago, I was on the Supporters Trust committee at the time. I had been to a couple of meetings that Supporters Direct held nationally, and they were talking about SLOs, you know, and abroad and how it went. There was a lad there called Mark Bradley from the Fan Experience Company. He was doing some presentations.
Uh-huh. Good friend of mine, Mark.
Yeah, oh, there you go. He's helped us quite a bit. And basically, obviously, we were talking about how successful SLOs had been in Europe, what was all behind it. And then Mark, obviously, doing his presentation into the kind of fan experience side of things and fan engagement. It was all kind of coming together. And what I had done was, as I say, I was on the Supporters Trust committee at the time, and had access to the club chairman and started kind of saying, look, SLOs, great idea, why don't you think about it? Not for a minute try to suggest myself. I was suggesting that they do it and appoint somebody else. However, but unbeknown to me, John Allison, the other John, was he was in the Fans Council committee, and he was kind of having the same thought. So he, unbeknown to me, he was pushing the chairman for the same thing as well. And this went on for a month or two. And then basically what happened was the SFA, obviously picking up from UEFA, had decided that SLOs, to have a club to have an SLO was part of the club compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically how it started. So as soon as St. Martin get hit with that, they come back to the tourists and say, right, you're the SLOs. And that's pretty much how it came about, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, I asked you. Basically, you know, we've had meetings with the chairman and various other people, you know, other staff members of the club, and it kind of progressed from there. As we said earlier on about the likes of the different meetings and what have you as well. But what I would say, we're obviously both volunteers. At some clubs, the likes of Rangers, Celtic, where we get full-time SLO, as do other clubs in England and Europe. And a lot of other clubs, like ourselves, John and I are volunteers. What I would say to anyone else in any other club, if you're a volunteer, it's so much better having two of you. For some one person as a volunteer to try and be SLO for any club, it is a massive task to try and keep your enthusiasm, to try and keep you going, to try and cover all the bases. Having two of us, for a start, you can bounce ideas off each other. Mm-hmm. We also try to kind of cover social media, not just for ourselves, but on forums, etc. So if people are saying, oh, what about this, what about that? Quite often, we're in a position to say, well, guys, here's the situation. Try and explain things a little bit better and try and be out there on the forums. Now, John works. I'm retired. You don't always have time for one person to do all that, as well as organising all the things like getting involved with the tickets and so on and so on. So definitely having two people. Holidays as well. You know, you're on holiday, you've got your family and all that kind of stuff. Definitely having two. I would recommend it. That's been a big deal. And when sometimes if one of you doesn't feel like it, the other one's picking it up and so on. As I say, in social media as well, John does the Twitter for the St Mirren SLO and I do the Facebook for St Mirren SLO as well as obviously we answer loads of calls on by email that people inquire with us as well. So I would say that's definitely the way to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're talking it through, Dom. It gets me wondering, how many hours a week would you say you know it takes to get it through? And is match day still your biggest part of the job, or is it elsewhere? Would you say?
Probably pre-COVID, it was match day, definitely, because not only. One of the things we did with regards match day experience, and John was talking about Mark Bradley, your good friend Mark Branley, and a lot of things we got from his presentation was the fan experience was so essential to get returning people coming back. And you'll get people to come back because, like myself, I've followed St Mirren my entire life, and that's just what I do on a Saturday. But football clubs to grow really need to make the experience more than just what's happening on the pitch. And John and I both thought this was very important. And also, we've got there was another guy, someone, Colin Bright, who is known as the Panda because he used to be in the mascot. We've just given away a spoiler there, who used to be Paisley Panda.
I need to put a spoiler alert on this one.
But Colin thought along the same lines, and he was always pestering the club from his position to do things and do loads of match day stuff. And one of the few things that the club actually did was put the three of us together. Mm-hmm. And from there, actually, from small things through the pre-match entertainment, which was called the Panda SLO pre-match entertainment. So from about an hour before kickoff, it grew. From having the first time, it was a couple of buskers and a small bouncy castle. And it grew and it grew and it grew. And we started getting fans from away teams coming. And we had inflatable bar football type. We've had inflatable darts there. We've had bands playing. And it really did grow quite popular. So on a match day, we would go along there to help out Colin and meet the fans. So that was always a commitment. The rest of the time, it's usually post a couple of hours a week or so, maybe more than that, John.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you get an event to organise or anything.
Ah, fair dues.
You spend a lot of time answering emails and what have you, engaging with the club.
Yeah.
We still have meetings.
It depends what's happened. If there's something going on or somebody's not happy, it can be every day for, you know, an hour or two responding to mails, and other times it can be a bit quiet, but then it will take off again, so... It's got a sort of peaks and troughs.
Yeah, I think over the COVID period, we've both been doing stuff on a kind of social media side of things.
Yeah.
Keep people's interest on. So that, because like my concern, or maybe your both were concerned, is that over the past year with the COVID, people are getting out of the habit of going to football, getting out of the habit of going to church, getting out of the habit of going to the cinema. That's the danger, is that once it comes back, people have found other things to do, and just, you know, football is a habit, going on a Saturday, whatever, meet your pals. Yeah. It's so easy for it to slip away. And I think for every club, you know, on the planet, there's a real big, you need, once it starts to come back, it has to be really a big bang theory and get everybody in and really promote themselves, do a bit of marketing and all that kind of stuff and really get everyone back in. So clubs really need to think about, every club has to think about how they're going to get people back on day one. I kind of worry that a lot of the talk is it's going to be a gradual thing, that some fans are going to be allowed in. And my fear is that if they only let a couple of thousand in to start with, the other couple of thousand will just say, oh, I'm not bothered because these guys are going in. And I'm concerned that people do drift away. And I think every club has to work hard at getting everyone back for day one.
Really does. It's going to be an interesting one over the next 12 months. Like you say, so many people have spoken quite passionately about this issue. And it's so. I was talking with a man at FIFA a couple of months back about this very problem. They, you know, said about rebuilding the relationship. It's like a break in the relationship, and the relationship needs to restart. And the club needs to look at the fan in a whole new way and, value it. And it's great to see so many supporter-led clubs and supporter initiatives, because that's when the supporters will be put front and centre of everything that's going on. Now, one of the things I want to ask quickly, though, John, you mentioned earlier about people when they fly in from Europe for these European weekends away, you get a few directions to some drinking haunts in Paisley. Are there any places where the fans really do? I mean, I assume the pre-match entertainment's more family orientated.
It is, yes.
Those who might like it to, you know, maybe wet their tongues before the game or something like that, sample a few of the local breweries. Are there any places where they like to go to?
Well, before I mentioned a few earlier, I remember we were talking about Town Centre, Paisley Gilmer Street Station, which is about 20 minutes walk away from the stadium. You know, so then the four clubs that run travel buses from the pubs, one's a Bank House, one's a Brewer's Tap, one's a Tile Bar, and one's a Court Bar. And these are all within like 50, 100 yards of the town centre. And that's the kind of four main ones, if you like. There are no pubs directly across from the stadium. You know, the nearest pub's probably a good 15-minute walk away.
Okay.
So that's kind of, people tend to drink in the town and then come out there, you know.
There is a supporters club in the stadium, but that is a subscription supporters club and a members only.
Fair dues. The other one I have to ask, because I'm thinking about running a competition here to find out who has the best pie around the Scottish leagues. And so what's yours like? What's the food like at the stadium, or is it better to pick something up?
We've got you get free beans with you. You can get free beans with your pie at St. Man Park.
Free beans with the pie? Oh, that's an beans. I've not had that.
Yeah, free beans with the pie. We do steak and gravy and traditional Scotch pies.
Oh, beautiful. Must go down well with punters. I mean, hopefully, guys. You know, we do not only get supporters back soon enough, but also the opportunity for people to visit from further afield.
Absolutely.
I haven't had a couple of people, you know, there's been a couple of guys over from Germany, Norway, etc., you know, at the stadium. You know, we've met a few. As John is saying as well, the pre-match entertainment, try and encourage away fans to come as well, you know, so
Try to market the away fans to come and, you know, come to the game. Because the more fans you get in, obviously, we keep in the home gate, the more fans you get in, the more money you get. So,
of course. I mean, what would you recommend to people who are coming to Paisley? What would you recommend? I mean, away from around, what, anything to really see? You know, what are the must sees on an away day?
Paisley Abbey, which is a beautiful medieval abbey. We've got the Paisley Town Hall, which is a Victorian lovely building as well. Paisley Museum, when it was open, it's been refurbished just now. It's had some interesting collections, especially of shawls. If you were into Paisley pattern and shawls and threadwear, some magnificent examples of that. But apart from that, yeah, the four pubs John talked about. Many pubs in Paisley. Many pubs.
Beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. And one question I do like to ask all my guests, and it's, you know, slightly away from your role at the club though here, guys. So might be local rivalries that gets the passion pumping, but you know, are there any away days that you really look forward to around Scotland? Are there any grounds, you know, it might have been grounds from the lower leagues that you miss? And when you get back to the championship, you're thinking, yeah, I can go to that place. Any ones you'd recommend to people?
I would say, like, you know, I think it's just, you mentioned there just now, there's grounds that we miss, because obviously we are now in the Premiership, and there's other clubs that we used to play, the likes of Partick Thistle, Morton, etc., who are now in the lower leagues. I say Partick Thistle was a good day out. It was just across the river, and it's in near the centre of Glasgow as well, so that's quite a kind of lively area. And Partick has got a lot of nightclubs and nightlife and pubs and what have you as well. But one of the days that I do miss now was Ayr United. I wouldn't say it was a rivalry, it was just a good day out. Again, back in the days when you could drink in the train and things like that before you went there, between getting the train from Paisley to Ayr was about a 3-can journey.
I like how you measure it in cans. That's super.
It's an old type stadium. You know, it's terracing all the way around. Behind the goals is covered terracing. So it's one of the old fashioned low roofs. So the noise is quite a lot for both ends of the ground. So it's an old style stadium. It was a day out at the seaside as well. And again, there's a lot of pubs down in here. So I always liked Ayr as a day out. But it's been a wee while since we've been down that way, you know.
Yeah,
you're not allowed to ask him about Inverness.
Come on, then. There must be a story there, guys. Come on.
Inverness is, although it's a bit of a trip, Inverness, again, in the lower league from is also, used to be a weekend away at Inverness. Mm-hmm. And used to book it up months in advance. It was always that, again, Inverness is a great town. I think the last time I was there, before it was a city, it was always a great town. People are really friendly. It was a good day out. A bit cold, but it was always a great time. But what I would say is, you know, weekends away now, Inverness and Aberdeen, you tend to find, and it's probably the same with all football fans, it's not something you can do now, is organise a weekend away months in advance, because inevitably television will change the, you know, they'll predict, and you know, I've seen it before when maybe people have been booked up to go maybe Aberdeen for a long weekend, and then the television steps in and the leagues change the game to a Monday night, you know, and everyone misses it and they lose the month. So I think people don't think as many people book weekends away in advance now as they used to.
It is a shame, isn't it? It is a shame.
But as far as kind of rivalries and days away just now in the Premier League, Premiership rather, probably Edinburgh is a good day out. Going to the likes of
Tynecastle is a good day.
Everyone keeps telling me about that. The atmosphere at Tynecastle is meant to be cracking. Is that right?
Yeah, it can be quite intimidating at times, but yeah, Tynecastle when full is it's a good ground. It's got a good atmosphere.
Any there, John? John A. Now that scream out to you away from the ones, John.
Yeah, I'd agree with John. And Somerset was a good one. As I don't get so much chance to travel these days to away games, but yeah, Somerset's a good one. Tynecastle. A lot of people like to go down Dumfries. I think that's a 4-can bus journey rather than a 3-can train journey. So yeah, a lot of people like that one.
Guys, I have to ask a serious question. And if it's 3 cans to Ayr and 4 cans to Dumfries, how many do you get for on the way up to Inverness? Or do you lose? Or is it better to say, when do you lose count?
Yeah. It's probably not as many as you think, because you've got to stop off to go to the pub, so you don't need as many cans.
Of course, guys. Of course. Now, It's been great chatting today. You've been absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Really appreciated it. Good luck for the rest of the season. When this goes out, will be towards the back end of the season, but we're recording this just before the final five games go on. Yeah. It's been not been the worst season so far.
Definitely not. So maybe when this goes out, we might even be in the Scottish Cup final, because we'll still get that. We're still in the Scottish Cup. So maybe.
Who you got in the next round?
The next round is we are we've just gone blank. Someone are.
Is it Inverness, John?
Yes, it's Inverness. Yes, Inverness. Thank you. Inverness, okay. Dally. And if we win that, it's the winner of Kilmarnock and whoever Kilmarnock are playing. Montrose.
Brilliant. People listening at home, of course, guys, where's the best place for them to follow? You mentioned the Facebook, Twitter pages, any addresses there. Where can they find you on it? Is there any...
The Twitter is SLO at St Martin. Facebook, I think, is the same. We're not really active on Instagram. It's really mostly those two that we use. And the email address is slo@stmartin.com.
Yeah. And then, of course, club website, stmartin.com as well, yeah?
Yeah, www.stmartin.com, stmartin.com.
Well, John, thank you so much for today, guys. I've enjoyed it. I hope you have too. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, mate.
No, thank you. That was good. Thank you.
All right. And, of course, I'm Adam, everyone at Ucrafoot24. Yeah. You can follow me across.
Good luck reaching your 42.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good luck on the final two. What did you say it was? Falkirk and Cove?
Falkirk and Cove still to go. Yes, Falkirk and Cove. Wherever you are, I'm coming for you. But to you at home, thank you so much. Stay safe there. Till next time, everyone. It's been another podcast for Shoot the Defence. Welcome to Scotland series. Take care and goodbye for now. Bye-bye.